Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters is a showcase for very interesting people that are pushing the edge of what's accepted as normal or limited consciousness in this life. My Paradigm Shifters are very conscious people, and I have a really exciting person here named Daniel Holeman, and he does art that he's calling it. What's the name of your website? It's called Awaken Visions. Is that
Yeah,
right?
it's like a double entendre. It's AwakenVisinos.
It's really, really good. And the thing that you said is you wanted to be kind of a champion of awakening in this time. And I want to say two things, probably a lot more, but right, we'll start with two. Is when I went through the images on awakenvisions.com, I really felt the energies that just pulse within me in response to the images you put up. They're beautiful geometrics with light and so on. That was really exciting. So let's just start with that. We'll do one thing at a time here.
Okay.
Where'd you start with that? Who is Daniel Holeman anyway?
Well, golly, that's a big question to ask. I guess I had a I got a little bit of a taste in art, or more in aesthetics, I would say. A taste from my mother, who used to have me help her when she would fix homemade Halloween and Christmas decorations and different things like that. And she was so pleased. Of course, little tiny kids love to please their mommy and their daddy. And she was so pleased when I would do something. She was a real sweetheart, and that was, I think, where I got my initial little activation of that quality of aesthetics, of that when things look pretty and nice, people like it. It's something that's good,
Well, it really does touch people and talk about awakening. Your art and often beauty does awaken people, doesn't it?
Well, I know people are moved and touched. I mean, I've had people, quite a few people over the decades now, cry or report that they're crying. I've had a lot of reports actually from people, even things that are very, very moving. Some woman had a terminally ill daughter that I sent one of the a poster of mine to, and she just told me how it so brightened up her day and just gave her all sorts of magic and wonder and stuff. And that kind of stuff really touches my heart. It makes me feel like, oh, well, good, I'm doing my job,
Oh, isn't that wonderful? So your art is, I know art always speaks with people, but yours speaks in a specific way. You use a lot of sacred geometrics and you use a lot of incredible light. Did you ever do what I want to quote and put in quotes is normal art, like painting and all that sort of thing? Or where did all this stuff emerge from? Have you studied geometrics? Have you studied metaphysics, spirituality?
I've studied metaphysics and spirituality all my life. That's my real gift. The art is like I think of that as a creative expression of that. That's my creative expression. Like some people might be a healer, but they have a creative expression where they play the guitar, at parties or something like that.
Right, okay.
And I just felt a little bit more confident with my artistic expression than I have with my messenger expression. So I've been rather categorized. I think it was early on. I think I early on I used to get more appreciation for, the art stuff from school and stuff like that than I did talking. And you can tell even the way I talk, it's not the most confident talker. So my messenger part of me was a little bit stunted or handicapped, I would kind of look back and say in hindsight. And so the art kind of developed as a way of expressing what I felt I needed to communicate that way instead of verbally, like most people do that sort of stuff, or written,
Well, your art is very transcendent. So, my question is probably a little bit obvious, but when were you were younger, did you have transcendent experience in response to Some of the images that came through you, did they come through you? Did you plan to develop them this way? You know what I'm saying? I love the creative process. I'm sure you do too.
Well, I was talking to a guy from that it's a great hero of mine, actually. He's a champion that I have admired and loved for many, many years, named John Anderson, who's the lead singer of the group that used to be around, a progressive rock group called Yes.
Oh,
Yes,
right,
maybe it's
okay.
now and then over the decades, but I really loved his messengering job and just the music that he created and sang. And he called me a couple times about some artwork stuff that never really happened. But I was telling him that just like music, because he was saying how something that he saw in an angel there, something that did a long time ago, didn't really look how angels look. And I said, well, I started off just imitating other people, like a lot of musicians will just imitate others, knowing that he did that when he was young, first starting off. And Rolling Stones, a lot of people, even the Beatles, imitated other people. And as they grew and evolved themselves, both their talent and also themselves as beings, their music got more original and more branded with their uniqueness, with their unique expression of who they were and how they did things. And that's kind of how it's gone for me. I started off emulating the psychedelic art that used to be on the posters and the little postcards for the Fillmore. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 60s. I was in high school from 66 to 70. So it was those key years of psychedelia.
Oh, for
It was
sure. Pretty
really changing.
exciting years too, right, Daniel?
Very exciting years. It was like trying everything that was coming along. But that was the thing that I would do is I would like kind of emulate the art that was on these posters and some albums too, and make things. I even have something on my website that's called 1969. That's a great collage. And to this day, actually, there's people that are amazed with that artwork that I did way back then. I just posted it on a website they're making for the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love, which isn't for 2 more years, but they're already starting a website for it. And I posted this thing on the Facebook page just for fun. And boy, did I get, I got over 100 likes and maybe 40 comments and people loving it, including Ken Keyes' son. Ken Keyes was the Merry Prankster.
Oh, right, of course,
Yeah,
yeah.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and other books. And his son is carrying on that kind of tradition. He asked me if he wanted to make this be part of the blotter art kind of collection that they have for psychedelic art that he has. Like there's a thing that called blotter art.
Blotter.
Yeah, it's art that they've used to print blotters of acid that they then cut up into tiny
Oh,
squares.
that's funny. Oh my gosh. Wow. So you really got your because there's so much light and there's so much you would have to link it to psychedelic radiant color, you know?
Well, that was, I guess, it's one of the things I wrote in my bio that is worth mentioning, probably, is that I had gotten into a taste of what I call now, I'm using this term, a taste of divinity for beautiful experiences. Because when you're doing psychedelics, a lot of you just sort of loosens their normal perceptions. And so, as consciousness, there's about anything can happen. You can go tumbling into shadow, which is a bad trip, or you can go off into archetypal realms and maybe channel or experience some of the archetypes in bigger spaces, or you can go to the Godhead and ex have a God realization experience, or a something of that order, and various other things, lots of different possibilities. When I was 16, and I had just I was a junior in high school, and we had to write a book report. It was a term paper, actually, not a book report, a term paper. It was half of our grade. I was a really nice English teacher, and we had to read 3 books and then write a term paper, tying them all together and giving our views on it. So I read The Prophet by Kahlil Gibran and Hermann Hesse's, what's that book by?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. It's not Labyrinth. It's I know that book where it's just complete.
Siddhartha, Siddhartha.
Oh, Siddhartha. Okay, there's
Siddhartha.
another one I'm thinking of that was outrageously good.
Right. Yeah, he's wrote sort of several of them. He was very popular at that time, as was the kind of the Eckhart Tolle of the times named Alan Watts.
Right.
And he was writing different books about Eastern philosophy and introducing them to the kind of budding psychedelic culture that was growing around various places around the planet. Anyway, it was a book called The Book on the Defense Against Knowing Who You
I
Are.
remember that. I remember it clearly.
And that was the main book that really affected me. The other ones were like, kind of poetic reading and stuff and stories, but this was nuts and bolts information that really spoke to me. Because he talked about the ego and how the ego is like this concocted identity that we identify with and think that's who we are, but it's not really who we are. We're really part, just an aspect of this greater one, and that's who our real identity. The other is just a made-up story, and yada yada yada. And it was like a very insightful book. Well, I turn the paper in and I get an A plus. She handed it on my desk with the exclamation points on it, and she looked at me in wonder. And she was because it was this really good book of art called Man's Role in the Universe, and she thought it was amazing. So then that night, my family happened to be away for the weekend. My dad and my two sisters were gone for some reason. I was home alone and I took some LSD. And it was so amazing because I had thought that I understood this stuff, but I had never, and I had even taken LSD before. But I took LSD after having my mind in all these areas. And it's like I experienced what I had been just thinking about before.
Wow.
I expanded my space and I saw how everything that I knew and was familiar with in this dimension was this illusion of just atoms and the perception and everything. And it all just sort of, I had an experience, in other words.
Very
It was such an
transcendent,
experience. It
very
was a taste of
transcendent.
divinity. It was
I
my
love
first
that.
real taste of divinity.
I want to interrupt here just for a sec because I had a lot of, I'm an intuitive, and I had a lot of visionary experiences when I was little and later, and only one acid trip I dared take. But the thing I always found hard when you have amazing visions, you can never replicate the vibrational level of the colors that you've seen. But your stuff, when I look at it, I go, wow, that is almost as incredibly vibrant as what happens when you're, out of the three-dimensional reality. You've gotten something going there that's amazing.
Well, thank you. They call that inner vision. Inner vision, and
Right.
it's amazing what the places I've been to in inner vision. It's other dimensions. It's like some people call it astral traveling or different names that people have for it, but it's basically just the kind of the lucid or somewhat lucid traveling in other dimensions, like dreams, only much more vivid because there's some more, I think, more presence there and more availability of awareness than when dream state, a
But
normal
then,
dream.
how do you download the incredible frequencies of color like that into the 3D? You must be a Mr. Magic.
Well, that happened gradually. If you saw my very first painting that I did, well, I could go
I'll look
back to
at it. I'll go back in and look. Yeah.
Go back though to the early question you had of where I started. The first paintings I did in high school were in art class, and I did a couple of paintings. One I gave to my father for Christmas, and it was a seascape, and it was nice. He took down, he liked it, he got it framed and stuff. And I didn't continue with art right away, but other than doing the psychedelic drawings with pen and ink and colored pencils and things like that. But then when I started art later on, I first did another couple of seascapes, something that was pretty. And then I didn't do anything for another little while, actually. I was slow to begin with because I didn't know what to do. I waited till I was like 30, 39 or something, 37 or 39 before I decided I wanted to be a painter. I could tell you that story if you want to hear that one too, but that's another, I'll wait until later.
But it is interesting because the creative process is, in your case, in a lot of our cases, is an awakening process, which is a part
Right.
of,
This,
yeah.
they start out very plain and like almost monotone color. And as I learned my skills, I was able to, and got more experience, I was able to deepen. And then it wasn't until I got Photoshop, really, because what I've been doing is oil paints, and then touching them up with, after they dried, with a little bit of airbrush to give them a little glow, a little ethereal, a little mystical look. And I was doing mystical type things that were somewhat emulating. Some of them were emulating other artists too, when I basically started to be an artist when I was in my late 30s. And then it wasn't until someone gave me a computer and I had heard about the internet. So I thought, oh, the internet might be a good place to have a gallery to show my work. And of course, that was an understatement because it's been, so good to me. It's got my work all around the world without me doing anything hardly, other than posting it.
Wow.
But it grew, and it's gotten to the point where I my technique is not so much where I see something and then I go, oh, I'm going to paint that. It's more like I have maybe some theme that's important to me at the time, that's heavenly or earthly or this or that, and I start doing something with it, and it's a process of discovery. And I started bringing in, actually taking my old paintings and bringing in things and kind of manipulating them and changing them around and stuff. And then it just grew and evolved. And now it's just like I kind of tap into like what feels good to me. What speaks to that place that I've been, what kind of scratches the surface of that wonderful dimension that I've visited in my visits, my tastes of divinity that I've had over the years. What kind of rings that bell in some way? And then that's what I use as my, kind of my system of what I like and what feels like it's worth painting.
Well, do the sacred geometrics, do they come through you? And what I mean is, have you studied that sort of thing, or does it just come through in your
No, I haven't studied
artistic
that.
drive?
I do. People have asked me to, like I know there was someone I did an album cover for. Someone wanted me to do a logo one time, and I came up with some sort of geometry. They had the basics of it, and I made my own version of it, and that then was adapted into a painting called Angel Heart. And then there's another one that's got a lot of triangles in it and light. And I was working on an album cover for someone, and she wanted a triangle inside a circle. And in the process of making that triangle, I made a whole bunch of triangles and started overlaying them over themselves and making a whole like a collage or a grid of triangles, which just looked cool to me. So it was experimenting again, where I was just playing and making it look cooler and cooler until I go, oh, that should be a painting.
And do you feel it as a message? Do you feel it vibrationally, or do you just enjoy it and feel the peace of producing something gorgeous,
Well,
beautiful?
sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just kind of am more general about something. I just go, oh, that looks really nice to me. That feels really good. And other times I go, oh, I dig this because I got some DNA in there, which is representing, this interface between consciousness and life. It's like the not the operating system, it's like the CPU, where it's kind of like the interface between the software and the hardware of things, in life. And I have this particular fancy for that whole thing, which we can discuss maybe a little other time too, the gene keys, which involves our psychology being encoded in our DNA, just like our physical qualities are. And so I put that in something, and I put maybe some other blades in something representing the armor, how we protect our hearts, and just I get into like the symbolism of things sometimes, but other times not, to answer your question.
So some of it just blurts through.
And some of it is like I get into the symbolism of it. I get kind of like, oh wow, this is like that. No, this would be that. And so I kind of get into it in a like a little bit like a mad scientist, you know.
Do your images, when I look at them, I'm kind of amazed. And so I feel like you must draw. I'm making this up and not being an artist myself, but you are that kind of artist. Do you draw it out, and then you don't actually paint them, do you? You color them through the computer, or you.
Well, now that's what I'm doing is I haven't I did only a couple of paintings on canvas in the last few years. I'm mostly doing it on with Photoshop, and I'm using it now. I'm making these videos that are just amazing. I've never spoken but kind of casually about all the rest of my artwork because it is what it is, and it's sort of, whether people like it or not. But this new stuff that I've kind of stumbled upon the last few months, which hardly anyone has seen, is these videos that I've made of stuff, and most of it is new art, so it's not on the not much of it is on the website anyway. A little bit is on the on just recent additions, but it's sort of like it takes you into that other dimension and it comes alive,
Oh my.
like you're there in one of these other Taste of Divinity types of places, dimensions, and it's music that like fits with the changes in the video, and people that watch it. I mean, I've had people crying watching. I've had people say they took them into an altered state, and everyone just seems to go crazy over it. I can't wait to show it to bigger audiences.
Well, it's interesting to me because as you say that, I'm very intrigued by the brain. I need to study it. I haven't done that except intuitively. And there's something about your lines and colors and the videos and so on. And I can feel where in the brain it starts to create a resonant activity or something. And it is in those centers where, where acid or LSD could take people, or where a huge mystical experience. Right? I mean, so you've got some it's an intuitive decision, isn't it? You didn't calculate that, right?
Right. I guess it somehow triggers little things, little it can trigger, or it emulates the stuff that's triggered by the pineal gland, I think is one of the things that is affected, as well as the normal perception is what keeps us in this trance, like of this normal waking state that we're in, just our normal lives. It's like a trance, and it's like a television set where it's set to a certain way, and that's kind of how we see reality through that lens. And when the perception all changes, I mean the physical perception through the eyes and the ears and the touch and everything, when those things get jumbled around by the chemicals, the psychoactive chemicals, then it leaves the consciousness open up to do those things. And maybe it touches the little secretions in the pineal gland sometimes. That gives that kind of heightened cosmic consciousness, God realization type of an experience, as far as I understand, from what I've read from some researchers who have done some study on this.
Have you ever had brain scans done? I mean, this is just a curiosity I have on other subjects that I interview people about. But brain scans are really interesting these days, and they show, someone who's had transmissions, for example, in the Oneness Blessing and so on. Their brain scans change radically over time, and I have that feeling with your work that you're changing the brains, or not changing. Like you said, evoking in the brain that access point to divinity. You're able to do that. Probably not for everyone. I think it's a very personal interaction with
Yeah.
the field, say.
But it's what's being depicted a lot of the times. Sometimes it's just other, pretty pictures. Sometimes it's very high frequency, I guess would be one way of saying it.
That's how I perceive it, is a lot of it is very high frequency. But for me, certain ones speak more to me on that level than others. I assume that's true for everyone, huh?
That is a weird, weird phenomenon that I've encountered again and again over the years. There's ones because I have my own favorites, and that they change over time. Usually, it's newer stuff that I come through, and I like it better than anything else.
That's a good sign, isn't it?
I have some certain favorites, and then there's certain ones that are just—I don't think they're that great, but for some reason or other, I put them online for a time maybe, and maybe I took them off after a while. But then I come to find that something that I consider a very minor work, something that wasn't really that great, but maybe at the time I thought it was okay, is someone's favorite. And that's the one they want to be their logo, or they want to something like that, or they want a special print of it, or just whatever. And it's like, it baffles me the range of tastes that people have. It's very encouraging, actually, to any artists out there. I would encourage them to just create and create and create. And there's going to be people that like whatever you do, as long as you bring out your excellence in some way. It doesn't have to look like anyone else's excellence. But if you do, if you create and create and create, your own uniqueness is what I'm saying. Your own genius gets the idea that it's okay to come forth. So it does.
Isn't that wonderful? I love that. I'm going to jump around just a bit because I love the word awaken and awakening. What does that mean to you, Daniel?
Well, it's like one analogy that I've used with people before is like being in a theater, in a movie theater, and you can be in there and you can be so absorbed in the drama that your face is just like moving with emotion and you're totally lost in the movie and you're just being the movie. And then next to you, someone coughs or someone hits your arm to ask you if you want some popcorn or something like that. And briefly, you're just pulled out of the trance.
Right.
You wake up to like the greater reality, the one that the movie is a contained in. And then you may go back into the movie or not or whatever, but that's that sort of thing. And having that taste of that greater reality, that this reality, this lifetime, this incarnation is just a little tiny speck in, as magnificent as it may be, it's still just a tiny little speck in a greater picture, a greater container of consciousness that is going on at various levels. I was on a planetary level, on maybe a solar system level, on a galaxy level, on a universe level. You know, I guess there's different levels of that consciousness that is kind of in a way, it's hierarchy, but not as we think of hierarchy as being a nasty thing. It's hierarchy in a glorious way.
I mean, levels and levels and levels of the self that can undo the programming and become more interactive with the greater and greater picture. Would you say that?
I would say more like conglomerates of fragments of self that operate as a unit, like the planet Earth, Gaia.
Right.
And there's definitely an intelligence and a being, if you will, that is much beyond our even capacity to imagine with our normal awareness, our normal minds, that is operating this planet. There's a being there, you know? And it may be because it's not exactly like us, but it is in a way, it's similar to us. Because it's kind of like holographic in nature. At least that's what I've discovered, and what I'm finding a lot of people, other people have discovered as well, that the nature of that fragmentation that happens, that kind of fractal, it's kind of a fractal-like thing of consciousness into different organisms, has that holographic type quality, meaning each fragment has the potential of it all. But what distinguishes it is the DNA, which is, means its operating system or its particular mandate of like how to its instructions of how to be and what to be and how to look and how to act and all those types of things.
Hey, it's really interesting. So, it seems imperative, or there's a swell of having massive numbers of people awaken at this time. Do you have anything to say about that? I think there's reasons for that. And I saw that you like to have a ministry, if you will. And is that through your art, or is it through what you teach about awakening, what it really means for our planet and for us?
Well, the ministry is something I always been identified with in my life. I grew up with 9 years of Catholic school, so I was kind of I took seriously a lot of what they said, you know, As I got to be a young teenager, around 12 or 13, I started to question much of what they said and throw out what I felt was not valid, and searched other places for things. But I kept that thing where they stressed the importance of staying connected to God, you know? And that's always been with me. It's like it's in my DNA. In fact, it is in my DNA.
Me too. And I also was Catholic. And I just wanted to say one of the greatest gifts they gave us is to be paying attention to spirits as well, or beyond the 3D in a lot of times.
Right.
I love that.
So, I forget what did say again what you asked?
Oh, I was just thinking that there's some movement, there
Oh,
are
right, the movement.
reasons. Yeah.
Well, so I grew up that way, with the Catholic Church and having that connection with divinity being important. When I got into, and it's always been a part of my life, but I haven't been very, I was kind of like in the closet with it, like, you know, like I was like gay or something. I was just sort of with my immediate circles, not really getting very big with it. But I was not very big with my life in general. And then when I started painting, I thought, and I started getting good. You know, which was just in the first few months of painting when I was in my late 30s, I thought people were saying, wow, that's really good and stuff. And so I thought, yeah, I can get really good at this and that will get an audience so that I can do my ministry.
Oh, very practical, very practical.
And I touched in on that thought or kind of, it was more of like an intention or and a thought. It was just an awareness, a thought that I had. You know, quite a few times over the years saying, hey, it's happening, it's happening. But it's not really, I haven't really activated that yet. I'm just now doing that. I'm just starting to. I'm just beginning to the last like few years or few months to really get more active with the actual ministry part of it. And so I changed my website in December to reflect that, putting up stuff about the gene keys and about my ministry and stuff. I used to have a separate website for that, which nobody went to.
Well,
So I
now let me
forged it with
ask you
the
this.
art.
You were talking, and many of your beautiful pieces have, and people should look at your website and really enjoy the thumbnails in which you can open up to be bigger ones. But many of them have the DNA symbolism in it and so on. And then you're talking about gene keys, and a lot of us are learning these days that we can bust out of the constrictions of our DNA. We don't have to be regulated as much by it as we used to because things are changing. And I just am watching like your art changing people, evoking in them the awakening and so on. And I'm going, where's it all going from your perspective? Are we ascending or how do you see it?
Well, this touches back to that earlier question too, about where do I see it all going? And I see it all, it could be mapped out if the wisdom in astrology were understood deeply instead of more egoically. There's different collective type events that are going on the planet now and have been recently and will continue for another few years. One of the major ones, but there's a lot of them, is this whole thing of Pluto transiting through the sign of Capricorn and bringing transformation to authority. And because authority has been a big problem on this planet, the people that were the meanest mothers out there, you know, it's like the robber barons, the ones that got to be in power were the meanest, most ruthless, money-seeking, power-grabbing types of folks. Not all of them, of course, but a majority of them that are running things. It's like the worst egoic nightmares are the ones that rose to the top.
Isn't that interesting? And not only once, but thousands and thousands of times.
And this is going to change during this cycle.
Promise?
Yes, this is destined to change during this Pluto going through Capricorn, these 19 or 20 years or whatever it is, which I think it ends around 1927 or so, 6 or something.
Something like that, yes.
I forget now, 27, 6, 25. But that's not the only thing. There's other things going on that are part of that greater intelligence that we are. You know, a lot of people poo-poo astrology and other things, but you know, I'm not so sure that's a good thing to poo-poo, because there's a lot of deep wisdom and understandings that can be had with just the correct understanding of it. And the basics of the correct understanding is that we are not these isolated, separate individuals in this random, unfriendly, huge universe. We are holographic units of expression, life units of this greater one that is all the stars, and it is all the planets, and it is expressing as all those things. And we're a part of that. We're intertwined with it, and we're made up of it. It's
And we're made
cellular.
up of stars, aren't we?
And so the movements of the stars is the movements of our greater self that's moving, and we're a part of that. And we based on our own curriculum, meaning our planetary configuration, and in more recent times, there's developed this kind of upgrade to the astrology paradigm called gene keys. Well, human design and gene keys, but primarily the gene keys is the one that I've found to be so meaningful and so awesome.
But like astrology, it's based on your time of birth, is it not?
Yeah, and so is this other one. It's like it's kind of an update. It combines not just the 12 archetypes, but it goes with the 64 archetypes that are laid out in the I Ching as the different issues or areas with which mankind can express itself, and ways that it can be, and issues that it can have, and so forth, the problems and issues and gifts. And so this gene keys material can tell a person based on their configuration of which genes are like their curriculum. It's like we all have all 64 archetypes in us, but certain ones are emphasized, just like certain planets are emphasized in traditional astrology, that are your kind of main characteristics, even though we have all 12 of them in us as well.
So is it linked to, like, my gene keys would be linked to my DNA, my normal?
And that's the thing, is that it can be found to be linked into the DNA. 64, a certain section of the genes are related to those 64 archetypes. And then, of course, there's lots of others. There's genes that are related to your physical characteristics. There's genes that are related to collective consciousness, history, that they're just it's that gets called junk DNA and so forth. Anyway, this is all stuff that's just people can study about this stuff on their own. I don't need to go into too much detail on it. It's kind of a little bit off track, but the point being is that there's things that we're going through collectively that portend or warrant one saying there's some major, what could be called a mutation or a transmutation, going to happen with us as a being, as a species.
Could it be kind of an innate unfoldment that is, programmed in there?
It's programmed in there to happen at certain times, and it's in the process of happening. And there's a lot of this whole thing with the internet and the information age is a big part of it. It allows that consciousness, which has so fragmented itself, to communicate with itself in ways that it speeds up the growth process tremendously.
And the unification of many possibly disparate people, right?
And unification and lots of other related things that go along with awakening, because awakening is not just about some spiritual taste of divinity like I'm talking about. That's just a little.
Or eating popcorn, Daniel.
It's about social justice and equality and fairness and kindness and environmental integrity and caring for the rest of life on the planet, because it's all part of the same one being. The other analogy I use a lot of times, besides the popcorn in the movie one, is the fingers on the hand. And I've given talks where I cover up my hand and just show my four fingers up the top. And if the fingers are like competing with each other or fighting with each other and hurting each other, only to have the hand lowered, the other hand that's covering it lowered, and show, oh my God, these are just extensions of this one hand that needs to like have all the fingers working in order to function right.
So that's really interesting. When I want to keep going back to the subject of awakening. So awakening using gene keys, the DNA, even your art, the interaction with the messages in your art and so on, it really evokes in people the uniqueness in this collective of oneness. Each of us is a unique part of that whole picture, aren't we? And many of us don't really know what our unique message is or our unique role is, but we have to have faith that it's there. Am I right?
Yeah, I reckon. I think that we just it's a matter of time. It's almost like cherries. I grew up with cherry trees in our backyard, and it's like they get ripe and they fall, you know. And it's like it's that bigger one is having this awakening experience through us, and it's it, we're we think because we're so egocentric and so steeped in duality, we think that it's us. Sort of in a way,
You mean creating the awakening?
it's kind of both. It's more, that's a more accurate way of saying it. It's both that we're participants, but in a greater sense, we're more like passengers along the way. We're going for a ride on this bigger ride, even though we're participating as well. But we're not causing a lot of the things that we think that we're responsible for. That's just a lot of ego thinking that it's what's it's running the show here. That's how I'd say we're not running the show. We're an actor in it. We're playing a part in it, but we're not running it.
I have to think about that in a way, but I think when one is embracing, for example, awakening, right?
Yeah.
That's a very active part. That's a very active participation, a very effective participation in what is a move that is already going to happen. But we can resist against it, can't we?
I guess so. I guess there's ways. Sometimes I question that as well. Sometimes I question that if we're moving too fast, that some of the things we do, the self-sabotage and all these things that people, you know, talk about, aren't just ways of slowing down the pace to make it keep aligned with everything else that's going on in the greater picture. And we blame ourselves because we're like, again, we're so steeped in our guilt and our shame and our self and our stories and our little lives, you know. But I think it's one again, one of those things, it's both and not either or, you know.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me because, you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, but some of the political stuff's pretty awful.
I've
And
noticed it. I'm very involved. I've been I'm not as involved as I used to be because I'm getting more involved with my ministry, but I used to be a fair activist with Pachamama Alliance and other groups that are doing some tremendous good out there. And I think it's very important that people do that, but doing it from the right place, of course, not from a place of anger and polarization with the boys at the top that are, you know, not doing a very good job to
well,
basically the
opposition
thing that
that.
the activists the most effective people thing that people can do to be act for activism, which
Yes.
by the way, the Dalai Lama endorses activism as much as meditation.
Yay! Thank you
It
for
was
that.
told that by a person that was personally told that by him. And the best thing that a person can do, the most effective thing is to wake up, is to do whatever they can to make that the highest priority. So there is a participation in that in a way. When they activate their potential that's in their DNA and come to their full possibility of expression of their gifts and offer those gifts generously to life, that is going to be their best form of activism. And they can still support financially and time-wise and energetically other groups and other movements. But the most effective thing they can do is activating them their own blueprint. And by that, I mean, I'm implying that most people are not really activated, though some people have certain things activated and certain things aren't activated.
It
Most
seems,
people are still very entranced.
yeah, I was
Even
going to say, it
spiritual
seems
people
like
can.
a lot of people aren't particularly interested in that at all.
Right.
Right?
And when this big shift happens, I think it's going to be happening around that around in around 10, 12 years, actually, probably 12 years. And there's agreement with me with some other people on this. There's going to be a big leap forward, and I think it will shift a lot of the issues that are currently so seem so insurmountable. You know, sort of like, you remember when the when we grew up, it just seemed that there was never a possibility. The way it was presented to us in the media and movies everywhere was that the Cold War was just the way the world was.
Right.
There's these guys and they're not going to change, and there's us and we're not going to change, so we're just kind of figure out how to kind of get along and just. But then in 1988 came along. That's when I started painting. And because I started painting, no, I'm just kidding. The wall came down, and the whole Cold War really ended, basically.
Well, I want to throw something back in about the 60s because we were extremely radical in the 60s, and I'm from Vancouver, BC, and we were running draft dodgers through the borders and all kinds of stuff. We were very, very active. But the thing that I remember in retrospect, because I left a lot of that to get totally into my spiritual self-awakening kind of thing, but thinking that that was the way through. But many of us were really heartbroken because we believed that we could bring peace. We believed that that's what people wanted. We believed everybody wanted to know, and they didn't really actually.
Yeah, well, I think what we missed out is that in order to get to the place where we can manifest our vision and our possibility, we have to go through the shadow. We have to go through all the shit that our parents didn't face and their parents didn't face. We have to go through all that. It's like
I think of the Rolling Stones thing, and can't you see your mother baby standing in your shadow? That was all that time, right?
Yeah. So, you know, getting that facing the lineage issues, which is another thing that the Gene Keys is all about.
Oh, is it?
I
Yeah,
used to call
okay.
them lineage issues, but there's different terms for them around different places. But it's basically the collective issues or shadow stuff that our parents had, that their parents had, that just got passed down generation to generation. It's like, okay, the buck stops here. There's people are saying, no, I'm going to complete on this, and they get, you know, ridiculed for being. Spending so much time in their workshops and their so workshops and satsangs and reading self-help books and all this stuff. And it's like, no, they're doing all the work that their ancestors didn't have the time to do. It wasn't the right timing for them.
Yeah,
Our
or
fear is very, very skewed.
they didn't know that that's what was allowed, or it
Well,
was.
it's like, again, it's like this astrology. What's happening is that mother, different gateways, different aspects of the wheel, of the 64 hexagram wheel of the I Ching. Different things are getting activated as time goes. And so one generation will pop up and they'll have something that the previous generation didn't have, as well as carrying forward the collective karma or the collective shadow stuff. That's not the right use of the word karma, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know that subconscious or the other programming, right?
Right. So that's that programming stuff, it gets passed along, as well as new openings, new gifts. Show up that were not native to the parents or the parents' generation, and that there's little children that are coming in now that are two, you know, maybe 2 years old or less, and you hand them a, my friend was telling me this. He had to his grandson. He hands the little iPhone to him, and the kid just goes right away right to the photos and finds a photo of his mother and calls her his mommy. And it just knew, and it had not seen a smartphone before. It just knew
Wow.
how to use it because it's in the DNA
Yeah.
of these, a lot of these young people. The logic around computers and that whole science is in the collective intelligence, and it's open and it's available to them. That's not open to us older geezers.
Maybe it's right in their genes. They've got the keys right in
They
the
got the
genes.
keys right in the genes.
I love it. Because I've seen little teeny kids handle a computer like I can't do.
Right.
I'm getting better at it, but
That's just an example. I don't know if that's the best example, but the point is
it's a
that there's
very good
new,
example, actually.
there's new openings, and there's people that I've talked to that are in their 20s that didn't have to read books to know that we're all part of the same one thing. It just, or maybe the first time they heard it, they just went, "Well, of course, naturally." You know, they grew up maybe in with different genes that were activated.
That's true. They're supposed to have a very different, a lot of them do have a very different gene set or whatever you call it.
It's all
Wow.
keeping updated.
Yeah. So, but we're not too old to catch up with our. I mean, okay. Well, we're
Well,
talking
what
about
we have is
awakening.
even
I've
young people
go
don't
ahead.
have is experience, and certain wisdom goes along with experience. So I get along really well because a lot of my ideas, even on what I'm talking about on the show, there may be people that listen to it and they go, "This guy's full of crap." And in the mainstream reality, which is maybe not your listeners, but in mainstream reality, I certainly get that. I'm not a welcome voice. And that's what stultified me in the early days from having that voice. It wasn't time yet. And it's beginning to be time because there's more and more, particularly young people, but also older people that have been doing their work that can hear what I'm saying. And
Yeah, I know.
that saying is not like something that I, my ego, contrived up or that I collected from all different books that I read or something like that. It's from my taste of divinity that I visited that place and bring back a certain awareness that just it just like things just make sense that way. You know, when you talk about all these mundane things like environmental integrity or environmental health and social justice and those things, it all just like it's absurd to think anything else. And you don't
Right.
need to read a book when you've been to the place where you see it's all the same hand many times.
But I often feel this, Daniel, and this is a very optimistic Pollyannish thing, but that the awakening is rising, and perhaps they've had their own divinity, but rising in some of the most egregious leaders that are putting the big Monty Python foot on potential in on this planet. You see what I mean? I think that it does rise in some of the least likely people.
Oh, that, absolutely. I agree with that. It can happen to criminals, people that, in fact, it's happening. I've spoken with people that have been into, and I actually went and visited the San Francisco main jail prison. And in prisons, they don't have much else to do. And a lot of times, these gurus like Gangaji and Adi Ashanti and Byron Katie and other types like that go and they visit the prisons and they speak to them. And of course, they don't have anything else to do. So they come to these lectures and they read these books that are passed around and they wake up.
Isn't that
And there's a lot
wonderful?
of people in prison that are like in there for life because when they were, 16 or 20 years old or something like that, they didn't have any other options but to rob a store and accidentally steal and shoot somebody or do something. And so their life in prison. But then, they're a totally different being 20 years later or 30 years later or 40 years later. And they wake up sometimes.
Well, and all that you're talking about with awakening and with your art form and with the gene keys, they are totally different people. We really understand that we're not the same as we were. We can certainly be different. Well, Daniel, we have to end this, but will you come back and speak with us again fairly soon and let us know what's going on and tell everybody how to see your artwork to get
I'd
hold
love
of
to.
you and the kinds of services that you do give?
Shall I tell them that now? The website again?
Yeah,
So
please.
awakenvisions.com, AwakenVisions.com. And yeah, I'd love to have people drop me a line if they want to and say, "Oh, I heard about you on Veronica's show."
I'd love it if they'd write in and tell you that or phone in.
And
That's
I'd love
great.
to be back. That would be really nice. I enjoy your questions and your spirit, Veronica. Thank you very much.
And you were delightful. Thank you so much. And we're going to work together. More about that later.
Yeah.
Thanks, Daniel.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.